Hello, everybody. Let's talk about Mercury. Okay, we are talking about gold, or we have been. Mercury came up in that, and we looked at this slide, which shows really processing of gold, right? Mercury has been around as long as gold mining has been around, basically, because it is the key, as we mentioned, as we talked about in an earlier lecture, it is the key ingredient here. In terms of isolating the gold because it dissolves, right? And that is called mercury amalgamation, something we discussed in a previous lecture. So let's continue. Talk about mercury, mining of mercury, which is going to be very closely associated with gold. We're going to talk about some environmental effects and some history. There's a lot of different elements to the lecture on Mercury. And then after Mercury, we'll be getting back into gemstones, which are really fun. So we looked at this slide at one point. The amalgamation process, again, is what we were just looking at in that previous image. It's where you take Mercury, which is, again, very unique in that it's the only element that is a metal and liquid at room temperature. Kind of amazing. So ultimately, its melting temperature is just very low. So any metal out there will eventually melt, right? If you heat it up enough. Mercury just happens to have a very low melting temperature so that it's liquid at room temperature. It's also extremely dense, right? You can take a lead block and it will float on mercury. Okay, so really interesting, kind of unique metal. We talked about the patio process, which is shown here, and that's where you're mixing your gold ore with mercury, and what you're basically doing is you're dissolving the gold, and then you eventually find some way to then pull that gold out of the mercury, and back in the day, it was just vaporized. In other words, it was allowed to evaporate. The mercury would evaporate, and it would leave the gold behind. There are other ways of going about that. Now, but that was a very common way. One of the things we talked about is that it bioaccumulates in fish. We're going to talk about that also in humans, right? Humans that interact with mercury, whether you're a miner, whether you're a refiner, especially back in the day, you ended up getting toxic levels of mercury. And it's an insidious one in that it builds slowly through time. So you don't really know it's happening until it's too late. Right, and it tends to affect people's nervous systems. This is Mad Hatter disease, which is comes from folks who are making hats, haberdashers, so people who make hats out of felt. Mercury was used in the felt because it made it more easy to work with, and it made for a better hat. Many people at least didn't realize that that was actually causing Mad Hatter disease, which is a neurological disorder. We talked about hydraulic mining a little bit, and just want to mention that this process, the patio process, amalgamation, is still used by millions of miners in Brazil, Ghana, Thailand, and places all over the world, and it still releases millions of tons into the environment annually. And we're going to look at that budget, how mercury kind of moves in and out of the environment in different systems, different reservoirs. And yeah, you can compare this to how much gold, which would have been, in the millions of pounds as opposed to tons during the California gold rush. Okay, we looked at this image in the previous lecture. I'm not going to go into it. This just shows placer deposits, mother lode, etc. Interesting. So mercury, this is just kind of an interesting fact sheet about it. I already mentioned that it is very unique, again, in that it's the only liquid metal at room temperature, also very dense, right? Things will float on it. Even lead, which is actually listed here, will float. It goes into making all sorts of interesting devices. It is very important in industry, whether you're talking about light bulbs, right? We're going to talk about that one a bit more. It does bioaccumulate in organisms, particularly fish. And why is that? Well, we'll talk about that. It's used for pigments. And then dental mercury, right? Dental amalgam. Some of the people taking this class may have fillings, cavity fillings that have mercury in them. I do. I actually have mercury in my mouth. And that's kind of an interesting, has all sorts of interesting implications. So we'll talk about that. But yeah, mercury is really interesting. So we're going to start by talking about one of the places where it's mined. in the world. This would have been kind of historically, at least, one of the most significant sources of mercury, and it is the mercury mines in Almaden, Spain. So in Europe, this is a series of mines. You can see this is fairly modern infrastructure here, but it has been mined there for hundreds, if not thousands of years, okay, all the way back into Roman times. Mercury has been mined from this location, so it's a well-known source of mercury, and it's been shipped all over the world for various purposes. So we're talking about Almaden, some interesting facts about that particular mine. It is currently a World Heritage Site as designated by UNESCO. The largest mercury site in the world. It's been exploited since Roman times, as I mentioned. They have produced over 250,000 tons of mercury. That's quite a bit. And, you know, since this has been active for a very long time, before people used sort of the health standards that we have today, you had miners, after they would spend their day at work in the subsurface, they would sit in hot rooms to sweat, literally sweat the mercury out of their body because they're absorbing it, you know, in all sorts of different ways. But that is really an incredible practice. So yeah, this was not a a healthy job, clearly. This is the life expectancy of these folks must have been incredibly low. Okay, before we get into the formation, I do want to just jump to another slide here, which is going to show us where we're at in space here. Let me bring in the map. There we go. So in this case now, we're looking at Almaden. So I just mentioned Almaden, Spain. So this is the town of Almaden. Where are we at? Well, we're in central Spain. I'm going to zoom out a little bit. There you go. There's Spain, right? My cursor is pretty much where Almaden is. You can see Madrid is going to be over here in the center. So let's zoom on back in. Over there's Toledo. There's Madrid right up there, okay? So just to the south, southwest of Madrid is the town of Almaden. And now if we zoom back in here, you can see, look at what's cool about topographic and satellite images like this is you can actually see quite a bit of geology. You can see there's mountains that are formed here that kind of run in this sort of an orientation generally, right? This is kind of in a west-east or northwest-southeast direction. So these are rocks, right? And these are layers of rock that have been folded and faulted in many cases, okay, and creating these bands. We see these same types of bands in the Appalachians and in the Rocky Mountains, etc. Very typical sort of formation. But you have sedimentary rocks, and those rocks have been folded, okay, and they end up being exposed at the surface. So the town of Almaden is right here. It's sitting in the middle of this sort of fold belt. And look over here. Can see kind of lines of rocks here, right? Is that pretty small? I'll zoom in a little bit more. See, these are layers of sedimentary rock, okay, that have been folded again. They've been deformed, and so at the surface, they're exposed like this. And between different layers, in this case in Almaden, it's actually a unique deposit of mercury. Most mercury deposits in the world are a little bit different. They're actually usually associated with volcanoes, volcanic provinces. There's no volcanoes anywhere close here in the middle of Spain, yet it happens to be one of the largest deposits. Again, just another point to say, we saw this with gold, right? There are a lot of different ways geologically that you can concentrate these ore minerals in the subsurface. And so in this case, there's sedimentary rocks. And remember, we've talked about sedimentary rocks in terms of groundwater. There's pore space in there. Fluids can move through those rocks fairly well compared to other types of rocks. And so in this case, you have mercury that's being deposited in the pore spaces as those fluids are flowing through these rocks, very old rocks, in many cases Paleozoic in age, so that's going to be over 250 million years old. Let's see here. Well, let's just to give you a sense of what this area looks like. I mean, this is the cool thing about Google Maps is you can click on things and see photographs. I mean, this is really beautiful. See, but you have these hills here, and actually, yeah, I can see the sedimentary rocks there. Let's go ahead and click on that. See, these are the sedimentary rocks, and they're exposed now at the surface, creating these hills. So these are layers of sedimentary rock that have been folded, and so now they're exposed. And within these sedimentary rocks are certain units is where mercury has been deposited, again, in the pore space. Really beautiful country out here. And then the town itself of Almaden. Okay, this is the ancient mining town. And if I sort of zoom in here, there is quite a bit of infrastructure left over, but it's a big museum at this point. I mean, it's a historic site. You know, there would have been mine shafts around. There's some infrastructure, etc. in the valley. This is going to give us a little bit of a view looking out over the space. So, right. So now we're looking towards the town from that viewpoint. You can see these rolling hills, which again are made up of these sedimentary rocks, which again are exposed in different places, like where I have my cursor here. And then some more relatively modern industrial infrastructure related to that mercury mining. Okay, but for the most part, in this location, this historic location of mercury mining, it's no longer really providing at least the levels that they saw way back in the day. Okay, so let's go on back to the slide deck. So, right, I guess that actually it's kind of hard to... No, I'm not covering it. Okay, so... Right, Almaden produced tons, literally, of mercury and really crazy conditions for the workers out there. Okay, so how does mercury normally form? So this is a little bit different from Almaden in some cases, in that you can see in this image, which comes from the reading, there's an intrusion here. And so when we say intrusion, we're really talking about, you know, a hot body of material, which is generally going to be magma in the subsurface. So you have... You know, magma, where do you get magma? Well, you get them in volcanic terrains. This is why mercury tends to be, in most cases, associated with volcanoes. So you get this intrusion or this source of heat, which, you know, this is going to be a common theme throughout. You end up with groundwater that's convecting and moving around, a hydrothermal system. It's the same thing we saw happening with gold, right? Where water is moving around, it's convecting because it's being heated up at depth or near a magma body. And then it's flowing towards cooler conditions, which is generally going to be near the surface, right? So it starts intercepting with groundwater, and it's that fluid which now has mercury dissolved in the fluid. It can be dissolved liquid. It could be dissolved vapor as well, right? But it can be dissolved in there. And as soon as it starts changing its pressure temperature in the same sense that we saw with gold and other things like copper, some of that is not going to be happy in solution anymore. It's going to want to precipitate out. And so that's what starts happening. It's condensing, precipitating, right, at different layers within that groundwater. And in the case of Almaden, that groundwater happened to be within these sedimentary rocks, and that's where it was being concentrated and so mined. So if we look at changes in production over the last, let's say, half a century, 1960 all the way up to 2010, a little bit beyond 2010 is what's being shown here. You have a lot of different, what we might call technology elements that are shown in this graph, right? Mercury being one of them. And mercury is this curve here. And it's actually over time, its production has been decreasing, right? It hasn't actually seen much of a peak relative to what existed at least back in the day. And that's because of, you know, for a lot of different reasons. A lot of that is related to technology or environmental concerns, health concerns. And oftentimes we just find other elements in other products, other ore minerals that are able to take its place in the different applications that we use it for. But yeah, mercury production has been on the decline for decades now. Interestingly, lithium, right? Obviously, we talked about this earlier on, having the opposite trajectory, okay, for hopefully at this point obvious reasons, right? We've talked about its use in batteries. So let's think about the mercury cycle. This also comes from the reading. These numbers are all in tons. This is metric tons. And what we're looking at is, you know, what the source is, how it's cycling through the environment, through the atmosphere, through the hydrosphere, in other words, in rivers, etc. And so you have a certain amount of mercury that's natural, which is going to be this lightest arrow here. And so what is the source of natural mercury? Well, over here you can see volcanic. So when you have volcanic eruptions, some amount of mercury is being emitted into the atmosphere. And that's just a natural process that occurs, right? And that those numbers are 80 to 600 metric tons. Okay, biomass burning, there's some amount of mercury that's contained within biomass. And as that burns, it also releases mercury vapor into the atmosphere, right? Soil and vegetation is also releasing mercury, and then anthropogenic. This is the part that is this human-induced, right? And this could be from burning coal. It could be from amalgamation, right? Letting that mercury evaporate from the surface so that you concentrate your gold and you precipitate your gold out. A lot of different potential sources there. We're going to look at some of the various sources of anthropogenic a little bit more closely in a moment. But all of these sources, right, are pushing mercury or releasing mercury into the atmosphere, right, in this case. And then you have what this general term here, deposition. Okay, so what's happening? Well, that mercury in vapor form ends up getting attached to aerosols. So these are very small, maybe pieces of dust, et cetera, that exist up in the atmosphere. And that mercury, it attaches to that dust. In other words, aerosols is sort of the technical term for it. And then when you get rainfall, when you get precipitation, liquid precipitation, rainfall, which we get plenty of in the Pacific Northwest, right, some of that mercury comes out as rain. The rain picks it up and brings it to the surface, where it then is deposited onto land or into the oceans, right? Rivers may bring that water then that has some mercury dissolved in it from the land into the oceans. And then you also have evaporation from the oceans, right? That's so you have, I mean, the hydrosphere and the atmosphere are in communication, right? There's movement of vapor of water back and forth. So the mercury is actually moving back and forth between the atmosphere and the hydrosphere and the oceans. And you also have a natural source, right, in the oceans. It's volcanic. I don't know if you remember, but one of the first lectures in this class, we talked about all the mid-oceanic ridges that exist in the ocean. So you have volcanic chains that exist underwater throughout all the oceans, in the Pacific Ocean, in the Atlantic Ocean, etc. And those volcanoes, which are erupting underwater at depth, right, but oftentimes very deep underwater, are releasing mercury into the oceans as well. So that's the cycle. But notice the anthropogenic piece. I mean, this is huge, right? 2,000 relative to, especially if you just consider the volcanic natural sources. I mean, it dwarfs both the volcanoes in the oceans and on land. So anthropogenic mercury is a serious contributor, is the main contributor at this point. And it's important, and it's something we need to understand. So we already talked about some of the applications of mercury in terms of how we use them. Dental amalgam, I mentioned, right? You have cavities that are filled with, in many cases, mercury fillings. It ends up being 50% mercury, a little bit of silver, a little bit of tin. So it's a mixture of things. And interestingly, there haven't been any documented, ill health effects from people with mercury-filled cavities. However, that mercury, in other words, it tends to stay in the filling. It doesn't end up getting, at least very much of it ends up getting incorporated into the body and again affecting the nervous system, which would be the biggest concern, right? It tends to stay in the filling, apparently, or the amount that gets incorporated into the body is so small that it ends up being okay, is what the health studies that have been done suggest. However, cremating bodies. So, you know, when people die, oftentimes they ask for their bodies to be cremated, which is when you're going to put yourself into the dead individual into an oven, you burn them, and that releases mercury from the dental amalgam into the atmosphere because it's literally, you're burning it, you're vaporizing it. And we're going to look at that in a moment because it actually does show up as a source of mercury into the atmosphere, is cremating bodies with dental amalgam, because at that point, the entire amount of mercury is released into the environment. CFL lights, these are fluorescent light bulbs, such as the one that's pictured here. And these things are kind of on their way out, right? LEDs are are used much more, even though there is a little bit of mercury even in those. But I don't know if people are aware of this, but you aren't supposed to throw away your CFL light bulbs. There's mercury in those, so they need to be recycled. If you just throw them away, it just goes into the environment again, and we're trying to reduce the amount of mercury that we release into the environment for health reasons, for environmental reasons. So some interesting facts, though, about CFL lights, you know, if we're just focused on that for a minute. If you replaced one light bulb in every U.S. household, that would decrease emissions equivalent to about 800,000 cars. Okay, so you multiply one light bulb by however many households exist in the United States. And that's a lot of car emissions, 800,000. So, you know, in other words, it could make a serious dent in terms of energy usage, 4 to 5 times as efficient as a standard incandescent light bulb. So 8 tons of mercury, that's HG. If all CFL, so fluorescent light bulbs, sold in the United States in 1 year. So that's how much mercury we're using for light bulbs in the USA in a given year in terms of light bulb, fluorescent light bulb production. Again, these numbers are going down because LEDs are sort of taking over. But it's just sort of an interesting ballpark to be aware of, 8 metric tons for 1 year's worth of light bulbs. And then if we took all CFL light bulbs and broke them all at the same time so that all that mercury that exists in those light bulbs was released into the environment, into the atmosphere, if it vaporized, for example, that'd be about 80 tons worth of mercury. I mean, it's a lot of mercury. It's quite a bit. It's sort of an interesting stat. So we have a lot of uses for mercury. Another one being paint. Okay, and this goes back as far as humans have existed, as far as we can tell. We've been using this stuff for a very long time, including the indigenous folks of North America, including people throughout Europe and all over the world, and Asia, etc. Vermilion paint, it's a color that has traditionally been extracted from the mineral cinnabar, which is mercury sulfate. Okay, it's mercury and sulfur mixed together. And here's a nice hand sample of cinnabar. It's named cinnabar because of that really cool color. So if you take this mineral, this in this case it's a rock, right, that consists of cinnabar, has a lot of cinnabar in it at least, and you start grinding that thing down, you're going to end up with a powder here. Okay, and generally the idea is that with those powders, the more you grind, the more fiery the red becomes. And so artisanal sort of people who were creating pigments for art, etc., you'd get a better reputation for creating like the brightest, best reds if you sat there and ground your cinnabar mineral down for a very long period of time. The Dutch were known in the 17th and 18th centuries as vermilion heaters, had sort of an international reputation for being really good at it. But ultimately, you heat a mixture of mercury and sulfur in a pot, in a clay pot, and that produces this this mercury sulfide or vermilion color that would be used. Also interesting to note that back in Roman times, this vermilion powder from cinnabar was used oftentimes as lipstick. You probably wouldn't want to do that today, right? That you don't want to have mercury on your lips, especially in powder form where it's being going into your body, being ingested ultimately. Okay, so mercury emissions. Let's take a look at that. So we already kind of mentioned two of the big ones, or actually I mentioned one of the big ones, which is up here, artisanal and small-scale mining. So again, the patio process amalgamation, not used much anymore, right? It's just known to be environmentally unfriendly. However, there are still a lot of countries that do it, especially lesser developed countries. And so there's still quite a bit of mercury that's emitted from what we'll call artisanal or small-scale mining. It's also a byproduct of coal burning. Okay, so you're burning coal, you're maybe generating electricity, more than likely. It's a very common reason to burn coal. And there is some amount of mercury that's released into the atmosphere. And so that ends up being the second largest source. And then you can kind of go down. It's actually, there's a bit of mercury that comes out in a lot of other ways. But look at the very bottom here. cremation. So cremation shows up on the graph, a very small sliver. But still, it's just kind of mind-blowing to me that the amount of dental amalgam that exists that has mercury in it in human beings it actually makes a small mark even on this graph based on the amount that's being released into the environment. So looking at this artisanal piece, you know, this is still a big source. I mean, I think you could pretty safely say it's a problem because of how it affects the environment and how it's contributing to our levels in the atmosphere. And this would be an example in Brazil, which shows, you know, this is unregulated artisanal mining, if you will. I mean, artisanal is a funny word to use because artisanal, in my mind, sort of evokes, you know, these positive images of people with their craft and doing really amazing artwork or creating really beautiful crafts, et cetera. In this case, we're talking artisanal mercury mining. And yeah, I mean, you could argue that this is a really beautiful image, actually, with all these different colors here, but it is completely destructive to the environment. Again, the people that are mining this, there's going to be health effects for them in addition to the world because of how much is emitted into the atmosphere. So not a good thing. I just mentioned that it's released when you burn coal, and so you have... just as an example of this, you know, in North America, we still burn coal quite a bit. We mentioned this earlier on, and we are going to be talking about coal in detail in a future lecture. That's going to be a big topic. But this is the Coal Creek Station in North Dakota. It released 735 pounds of mercury per year. It's the largest coal-fired power plant about 50 miles north of Bismarck, owned by Minnesota-based Great River Energy. But what they're doing, as most developed countries are doing and have been doing, is trying to reduce emissions, right? And they've done this significantly, apparently, over the years, reducing mercury emissions by 40%, ultimately by using scrubbers, which is where the exhaust is going to be going prior to being allowed into the atmosphere. It goes through a series of filters, ultimately, which remove mercury. And that, you know, this is due to the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, right? So you have regulatory bodies in the United States and elsewhere that are regulating the amount of mercury you can emit into the atmosphere. Again, this is especially going to be prominent in developed countries like North America and Europe. But yeah, it is reducing our mercury emissions quite a bit. So that's a good thing. Let's continue on to see where you have mercury kind of in the environment for the most part in the United States. So notice this is total mercury wet deposition. So remember, we looked at the cycle of mercury throughout different reservoirs, the atmosphere, hydrosphere, lithosphere being the earth, the solid earth, right? Well, wet deposition, that's where you have mercury that's being deposited through precipitation onto the surface, into soil water, into streams, etc. And the places where it's going to be hottest, so the highest amount, and this is in micrograms, okay, per meter squared, but you can see the southeastern United States and then parts of the Midwest also have quite a bit. A little bit in the Rocky Mountains as well, but that's kind of where it seems to be concentrated, right, in terms of wet deposition, where it's coming out. So that's kind of interesting. And then we can also sort of step out and look at the world. In this case, China and other countries in Southeast Asia are producing quite a bit today. Again, a lot of this is because of artisanal mining in China, and not so much. I mean, there's a lot of coal-fired power plants there. I mean, some of that could be mercury mining as well, but you can see the brightest colors are going to be Southeast Asia, quite a bit in China, and then South America also, right, which we were just looking at an example in Brazil. You know, North America, you don't even have certain places sort of registering in terms of total mercury. In this case, we're looking at grams per kilometer squared per year. So this is a little bit of a different measure than what we looked at a second ago. Okay, and what does this look like over time? So we bring into the time element of how emissions are occurring. If we go from 2000 up to 2015, so about 15 years of data here, kind of a stretch here in the middle in terms of the scale, notice that. But if you look at annual mercury emissions, okay, and this is going to be in megagrams, so peak of 10,000 tons of mercury production in the United States in 1971, okay, which is before this graph shows. But let's look at the United States, or North America at least, which is going to be this dark blue. That's this curve here. You can see that since 1971, we had a peak, and we've been decreasing since that time, right? And a lot of this is because of regulation, et cetera, like we saw is happening in North Dakota. So you have a decrease happening in North America. Also look at Europe, which is going to be this kind of this bright bluish teal colored, okay, cyan, I don't know what you would call that. But yeah, you have also a decrease kind of like we see in North America happening in Europe. On the other hand, there's a place here that's seeing the opposite trend, right? East Asia has been increasing, well, increased quite a bit from 2000 to 2010 and is staying pretty high, which is kind of unfortunate. So it sort of depends on where you're at in the world, right? It depends on regulation, et cetera. And yeah, but we've, at least in North America and a lot of developed countries, we've been going in the right direction. So I do want to show before we end this lecture, just for reference here, I'm going to show where we're at in North America when I talked about that mine. Okay, the Cold Creek Station, North Dakota. Let's go there just for a second here. Okay, can people see this image now, hopefully? So yeah, we are in North Dakota. This is the Cold Creek Station. Let's zoom out just so you can see where we're at in space. I always like bringing these things in Google Earth because it's, well, because you can. And I also just like putting things into space. It's interesting to see where we're at. So Portland's way over here, right? This is North Dakota, all right? Cold Creek Station. So very significant coal-fired power plant, right? Quite a bit of mercury is being emitted there, but they've been reducing their emissions once again. This is kind of what it looks like from the air, right? You got two big smokestacks here, and how are they getting their coal in? Well, we're going to be looking at the coal plants in detail, as I mentioned, but see the rail line in here? Okay, usually for coal plants, you're going to have railroads that are coming in and delivering all that coal. So it comes up here, eventually makes its way over, and then it's going to be unloaded on conveyor belts and all sorts of things that get that coal ultimately into your power plants, which you can see the smokestacks here. Actually, here's a side view of it. And see this big pile of coal out here. They just have a big pile of it, and they're bringing it in. But yeah, so these emissions here, what's coming out of these smokestacks, I mean, that's some stuff that isn't necessarily good for the environment, right? But it's getting better. Again, they're starting to regulate that and starting to scrub some of this material before it gets out of the atmosphere ultimately to reduce emissions. Would they have been doing this without the EPA requiring it? Well, it definitely costs them money, right, to put these filters on. So oftentimes if your shareholders or profit is the only thing you care about, then it's not something you're going to be motivated to do unless the government or somebody comes along and forces you. Hey, it's about being a good citizen as well. But okay, so that's all I'm going to say about mercury at the moment. Thanks for listening, and look out for the next lecture. Lots of really cool videos as well on this, one of which is, so Almaden I mentioned in Spain. There's a new Almaden, which is a town in California, and I'm going to have you learning about that. It's also a place where mercury is being mined, and it has a history to it. So I want you to learn about that from some videos. There are some discussion questions, a quiz as usual. Good luck with everything. Thank you.